The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's going to be a very big deal, I think, across the country for New York City, of course, the largest city in the United States, to say that if you are someone who isn't a citizen but is here on a green card or whatever the specifications are, you're going to be allowed to participate in our democracy here in New York City.
And wanting to encourage people to become citizens fully. And there's a lot of people who do not pursue full citizenship, even though they can. I'm also concerned about the legal question, which is unclear whether it's something that can be done on the local level.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was that's really a, I don't know the right word for it. Troubling story. I mean, non-citizens voting in New York City elections. I think troubling is probably the right word for it. Let me share a little bit of that story with you, and then I'll share with you about, there's a new documentary out on whether or not the White House is haunted. And of course, today's the last day to get that indulgence for soul. So we'll try to dive into a lot of these things in this hour. But the New York City Council is moving towards allowing some non-citizens to vote in local elections. Could you imagine just going to Russia or to Mexico or to any other country and saying, okay, I'm going to vote? It doesn't work that way, right? So there is legislation poised to be approved by a city council supermajority on December 9th. So you're about a week and a couple days away, that would benefit about 800,000 legal permanent residents and immigrants with work authorization. But the bill requires that immigrants be residents in New York for 30 days, otherwise eligible to vote under state law. So what are the key aspects here, just on this note, of becoming a citizen of any country, not just the United States of America, is that you get to participate in the political life of that country, primarily through voting, right? You've got to say. The U.S. is full of examples of people who came here as immigrants who, of course, ended up becoming political leaders after they became citizens. The latest is one who I just love. This woman is, I should really try to get her on the show. We should talk to her. She's something else. She loves America. The latest is a woman named Winsome Sears. Remember her? Newly elected lieutenant governor of Virginia. She came from Jamaica. She won, very eloquent. There was a picture of her going around with an AR-15, I think, or something along those lines. People were very upset over it. But she's a woman who believes in America and in the rights of America and great patriotism. I saw a FedEx worker the other day. There was a piece of video running around. He thought nobody was looking, right? He got off his truck. He saw an American flag laying on a bush, right? So he, you know, these FedEx guys have schedules to keep. They got to meet their quota. They got to do their whole thing. He gets out. He lifts up the flag. He puts it back in the holder. It must have blown out. And there he stands at attention and salutes it. And he didn't do this because he wanted fame. He didn't want this for a YouTube career. He just did it because he served the nation, and he has respect for the flag and all that it stands for all those who gave their life, who bled for this country, who allowed us to have the freedoms that you and I today enjoy. The home he did it to, found out later, was an immigrant, somebody who came to this country and is proud to be American. They said America gave us the American dream. We are the greatest nation. We are the greatest nation on the planet. I am proud to be an American. I really am. And if you are an immigrant, I know you probably feel the same way. You know, as I said, Winsome Sears was one of those. And man, I hope she runs for even higher office. I hope she continues to stay in politics. I love the spirit of patriotism and love of our nation. But what's happening in our country today, we're seeing right now New York City, where the city council is taking up the question of whether or not 800,000 non-citizens, okay, non-citizens should be allowed to vote in municipal elections. I don't know how you feel about that. On the surface, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. There's a bill that the council is considering. It allows anyone, as I said, who lives in the country for 30 days or lives in the city for a mere 30 days to go ahead and vote. And it just makes me wonder, is this one of the reasons why our southern border is open? You know, is it, it could be easily rectified. And you heard in our news report, you've been seeing some other things that, you know, we're going to try to resolve this this deluge, really, of immigrants from the southern border. My great concern is all the drugs that are coming in. You know, these drug cartels are profiting not just on drug smuggling, but on human smuggling. We're seeing this as a, as you know, a mold. $1 million industry for these guys. They're making tons of money. But I also think that there are certain parties who might think, well, if they come in, and you see the T-shirts they're wearing. They're saying, you know, Joe Biden said I could come to America. You know, do they think, you know, once they get in that, okay, if these immigrants come in, they're going to vote for us. We're going to be able to hold power. Again, this is just New York City right now. This is the, you know, the city council taking up the question about whether or not almost a million non-citizens should be allowed to vote. But the city would set up a special voter registration form specifically for immigrants, and it would say that they would be able to vote on city issues and candidates, but not on state and federal issues as candidates. So Eric Adams, the incoming mayor of the Big Apple, he told the New York Daily News that he believes that the city cannot be a beacon to the world. We cannot continue to attract global talent, he says, and energy and you know, entrepreneurship that has allowed that city to thrive for centuries if we don't give immigrants a vote in how the city is run and, you know, what our priorities are for the future. And again, my grandfather was an immigrant. He came in from Italy, you know, at the turn of the century in 1908 or whenever he came over here. And, you know, he came through Ellis Island. So, yeah, I mean, New York was a great melting pot. We live in a little bit of a different time, though. You know, the current mayor there, Bill de Blasio, on the other hand, doesn't think that a bill, you know, he doesn't like the bill and thinks it'll be an obstacle for people wanting to become citizens. If you can vote, you can do all these things. Why become a citizen? If you can live in what's sometimes considered the capital of the world with a green card or with work authorization and still be able to vote in what happens in that city, well, why become a citizen? You know, why do that? But here's the other thing, and I'll leave you on this particular note here. Let's just say I go back to Italy or to France, right? Would I be able to participate in their elections? No, I would not. Not until I became a citizen. And that's just how the laws work. And I think that's the way they should work. Being a citizen of a country, it gets you certain privileges. And people who aren't citizens shouldn't have those same privileges, right? Otherwise, there's no sense of order, you know? So, I want to put that on your radar. We'll see how it shakes out. We'll see what happens. You know, I was thinking about this, you know, it's kind of like a family. You know, you have certain rights and privileges in the home that visitors don't have, right? So even in the family, there are certain rights and privileges that, for instance, parents, you know, have that children don't have. And it's the same way with nations. Citizens have always had certain legal rights and privileges that non-citizens don't. You know, just think about that paradox. You know, St. Paul's a Roman city, a citizen. He had legal rights that Jesus Christ himself did not have. So this isn't anything against immigrants. I'm all about immigration. I think our nation's stronger in many respects for those who come here. And there are legal ways of doing it. And I do have concerns about our open borders, but our country has thrived on immigration. My grandfather was an immigrant. One of your ancestors probably was, you know. And if you're not a citizen of this country, you know, I think you should, if you really want to live here, you want to be part of the process, then become legal, become a legal citizen. You shouldn't be given the rights and privileges that citizens have, whether those certain protections of the law or whether it's the right to vote. So anyway, that is it's just a new story that came across my radar. I thought, New York City, you know, New York City, that's where this is all happening. I want to share another story with you. And this is an interesting one. There's a documentary that is coming out. I think may have already aired. And I didn't get a chance to see this, but it's called Demon in the White House, right? And it takes a look at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, right? The White House as the haunted home in which there may be a demonic presence. Now, again, I'm going to just throw this out to you. This is for both your entertainment and for your rumination. You can think about this. As I began to look at it, I saw this story over the week, and I think the documentary aired earlier last week. But there's some evidence that there are some real paranormal disturbances in the White House. And it raises questions about whether or not it's haunted. Just some of the stories that I came across. I'll throw this out to you and we'll talk about it because I think some of these can be purgatorial souls. I also do believe there could be some demonic things. Like when you brush up against the occult, you know, when you have seances, you know, when you have new age activity in the White House. Satan's a legalist. I say it all the time. You give him territory. You give him the right. There was a story that back in 1946, when President Harry S. Truman went to bed at 9 o'clock, about 6 hours later, 3 in the morning, right? He hears, knock, knock, knock. And the sound against his bedroom door, right? Somebody was knocking on his door and awakened him. So he woke his wife. And they actually have this letter. It's archived in the Presidential Library and Museum. He said he jumped out of bed. He threw on his bathrobe. He opened the door. Nobody was there. And he looked down the hall, and he looked in the other room. Still no one. He went back to bed after locking the door, and he heard footsteps in the room. You know, he jumped up. He looked. Nobody was there. And he shouted to his wife, "This damn place is haunted!" You know, and the Secret Service said, not even a white watchman was up there at that late hour. Nobody was in that quarter of the home. You know, in addition to, you know, that story, I mean, the White House has long housed unsettling specters of a different kind, if you will. You know, there have been a lot of different leaders and staff members who stayed in the White House who claim it's haunted, who claim that there's some sort of activity there. There was one instance that took place. I mean, there's a lot of them, actually. Maybe I'll share a couple of them with them. Some say, hey, look, the White House is perhaps arguably the most, the nation's most famous haunted house. And again, these have been documented. You can do your own research and read them. I was looking at a number of different sources over the holidays at this. I just thought I'd share it with you. You know, one of those goes all the way back to Abraham Lincoln. He reportedly would receive regular visits from his son, Willie, who died. His son died in the White House in 1862 when he was just 11 years old. And I think he died of typhoid fever. It's probably what he died of. And, of course, Lincoln's wife, Mary Todd, she was destroyed by the loss of her son, and rightly so. You have this beautiful 11-year-old boy who is taken from you prematurely. And she was so grief-stricken by the loss of her son that she just she remained in her room for weeks. Now, maybe it was grief. Maybe it was some sort of psychosis. I don't know, but she spoke of seeing her son's ghost at the foot of her bed. And there were reports of, you know, hearing Thomas Jefferson playing the violin, Andrew Jackson swearing. Now, again, who knows? Could be just stories, right? And very well, maybe. But after his assassination in 1865, supposedly Lincoln apparently joined his son. The First Lady, Grace Coolidge, spoke in a number of different magazine accounts years later of seeing Lincoln looking out the window at what had been in his office. So there have been a lot of different sightings over the years, over the decades, in the presidential administrations that followed. There was a queen from the Netherlands that was sleeping in the Lincoln bedroom in 1942, and she reportedly heard a knock on her bedroom door, too, opened it, and she claimed she saw Lincoln, a bearded president, a ghost, a specter of the president, and she fainted. 2 years earlier, there was a British prime minister, of course, Winston Churchill. I know you know him. According to accounts, he had just stepped out of a hot bath in that same room, and he was wearing nothing. You know, he had nothing on but a cigar because he was smoking it. And he supposedly claims, and this has all been written down and put in the archive, Lincoln by the fireplace. And you know, these could be stories, very much so. But I do think they're interesting because I do think sometimes souls need prayer, souls who die prematurely. In a few moments, I'll be joined by Susan Tassone. And today is, of course, the last day of November. You can still get a plenary indulgence for souls. You can offer it for Lincoln. You can offer it for any of these souls. Maybe you have a home right now where there are disturbances. You know, maybe you are seeing ghosts. And if so, my reaction is always have the house blessed. Secondly, it is to pray for them. Pray for them in a particular way. You know, there were haunting accounts that involved two of the president's wives. Abigail Adams, of course, John Adams' wife, was the first lady to live in the White House, and she used the East Room to dry sheets. And they claim that since her death, there have been reported sightings of her likeness in the area. And she walks with her arms outstretched as though holding clean linens. It sounds like stories to me, doesn't it, when you hear some of these things? But it does. It does make you think. It's kind of cool. Even John F. Kennedy, when he died, there were also stories about perhaps him. William Henry Harrison, who was the first president to die in the White House, said to haunt the attic, which is now the third floor. Truman, as I shared with you already, had a lot of different paranormal activity when he was in the White House. Ronald Reagan, here's a cool one, too. I remember reading this one over the holiday. Reagan's dog, he had a dog named Rex, right? Reagan's dog would end up barking at the doorway of Lincoln's bedroom as if though he saw something in there. He sensed something. And Reagan told his guest one time, he had a state dinner in 1986, he told his guest that Rex would bark at the entrance of the Lincoln bedroom and refuse to go inside. And Reagan's daughter and son-in-law also reported seeing ghostly figures in the bedroom. What is it about animals? Do they have a sixth sense? They have a different sense that they can maybe see or sense the spiritual? I don't know, but that is a strange story. President George W. Bush's daughters, remember Jenna and Barbara? They heard opera singing and 1920s piano music coming out of a fireplace in their bedroom. And I think Jenna had wrote, she did a memoir in 2017 with Barbara called Sisters First. And they said they knew if any place was haunted, it was that house. And she says, we tried to rationalize it, right? They tried to, you know, explain it away. When the White House butler, Buddy Carter, asked the girls how they slept, they told him about the mysterious singing, the music they heard. And the guy said, oh, you know, Miss Jenna, I believe you. You wouldn't believe what I've seen and what I've heard over the years. And apparently, you know, there were others who've seen the same type of thing. Even Michelle Obama. I don't know how true this is, but First Lady Michelle Obama said that she and President Obama, Barack Obama, heard noises coming from the hallway outside their bedroom. And she also said that her family members felt odd sensations as if somebody was gnawing at their feet, perhaps the ghost of a White House pet, who knows, right? But I mean, there's just some of the stories. But if you go back in time, even President Andrew Jackson, is said to haunt the Rose Room where he used to sleep. Who knows? Is this part of the lore of the White House? It could be. But here's the thing. One final note, and I'll take a break, and we can talk about this when I come back. You know, when you have seances trying to conjure the dead, as Lincoln's wife has done. Reagan's wife was into the New Age. When you have in occultist, when you allow occult activity into your place, whether it's the White House or not, you open the door. You create a portal, many exorcists say, to this type of spiritual activity. And I'm telling you, it's not good. Now, there are other cases, too. Padre Pio was frequented by the dead many, many times, okay, who came seeking his prayer. You know, he shared one story of bustling in one of the chapels where he was praying, and somebody had knocked over a candelabra, and he went in there. Nobody was there. And he was met by an apparitional figure. It was another Capuchin who died before he came there, and the guy was doing his penance, he said, there in the chapel. And you know, Padre Pio said he'd offer a mass for him to free him. So they can create disturbances, whether you knock over a candelabra, whether there's strange music, whether doors open or shut, whether there's rapping or knocking. Bottom line is, if you are experiencing this, have your house blessed. And also have masses offered for those who've gone before us. They've died tragic or sudden deaths, so they weren't right with God. Prayer is so powerful. God is outside of time. The Mass is the most powerful prayer of all. Offer a Mass for those particular souls. And when we come back, in fact, I'll take a break now. We can talk about this. I'll talk about some of those purgatorial encounters. It's the last day of November, last day to get your plenary indulgence for the souls. If you haven't done that yet, I'll tell you how you can do it. It's simple. It's short. Can offer it for one of your loved ones that have gone before you, or perhaps for that specter or ghost that's haunting your home. All right, we'll be back. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show. Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Connect with Drew on the Relevant Radio app.
So whether or not the White House is haunted or not, it is food for thought, but it does raise questions. Do souls communicate from the beyond? Do your loved ones send you signals? In his mercy, I think God may allow that, but you know, here you come to it. I got to really caution you when you go down that path, because the church is really clear. We're not to initiate contact. You're not to participate in things like seances, which are explicitly forbidden. You know, you're not to go to mediums. You are not to try to conjure the dead. Those are problematic. And I'll tell you what, you will open a very dark can of worms, if you will. You're going to open a lot of personal problems. But, you know, we're told that there are times when the deceased do try to get your attention. And how can I say that? Well, many are the saints that have experienced visits from the dead. St. Padre Pio, of course, his stories are legion. I mean, they're unbelievable how many souls have come to visit him. More souls visited him from purgatory than the hundreds of thousands who traveled from around the world and went to San Giovanni Rotondo, where he lived. St. Faustina, my girl. You know, I love St. Faustina. She's one of my favorite saints. She was visited by purgatorial souls. You know, heavenly souls they're here to help us. And for, you know, so often, in many cases, they need prayer, like the nun who appeared to St. Faustina. Because souls can't pray for themselves. They're dependent on you. And as I said, a single mass can raise a soul to a much higher level of purgatory, maybe even raise them, free them into heaven. A Hail Mary and Our Father can mean the world to them, you know? So you got to remember the deceased. Today's the last day of November, and the church has given us a great gift. They've given us a plenary indulgence that we can free a soul from purgatory with. Susan Tassoni will join me. I'm going to let her explain to you how you can do that. But there are those who say they've been awoken at night feeling a sudden presence of a loved one. You know, sometimes there's noises. Sometimes it could be a soul begging for prayers. You know, again, scripture is very clear. Don't dabble with necromancy. Don't invite conversations with the dead. I cannot be more clear on this point. But, you know, it's long known from scripture and from centuries of church experiences, from theology, that purgatorial souls can, on occasion, send signs. You know, Our Lady, one of her famous apparitions, once said that it happens that God will permit them to manifest themselves in different ways. I mean, Padre Pio, Faustina, two classic examples, but for the good. There's a theological advisor. He wrote a book, Adam Bly. I don't think he's not an exorcist. I don't think he is. He's an expert, though. He's a theological advisor on religious demonology and exorcism in the Diocese of Pittsburgh. He's written a couple books. The book is called Hauntings, Possession, and Exorcism. It was years ago that I had him on. But he says there is a way to distinguish a demon from a purgatorial soul. And the best way to do that, souls in purgatory are non-destructive in their signals, right? Souls in purgatory, they don't make manifestations that are terrifying, right? You're not going to be frightened. They usually limit them to sounds or, you know, to a word he says, or the movement of an object. That's kind of frightening to me still. But souls in purgatory, he says, limit their interaction with humans to signaling for help. And he says in rare cases, they need, you know, the need for a particular wrong to be righted. And souls in purgatory don't engage in prolonged communication. They don't attack people. They don't attack religious or holy things. And purgatorial souls become completely still and silent when prayer and mass are offered for them. So just something to keep in mind as you discern this. But let me welcome to the broadcast longtime friend, Susan Tassone, one of the great advocates for the souls in purgatory and a fellow lover of divine mercy and the devotion. It really is a gift for our time. I thought it'd be great to have her here just so she can bring you up to speed on what you can do for those souls who are maybe calling out to you for for prayer. Good to have you with me today, Susan. Welcome back.
Drew, it's always a pleasure. You're my favorite Purgatory Regional Office.
You say that to all Purgatory
busters. No, I don't. I could sit and listen to you forever because you've got it down. You understand. You have the passion. You have the love. You know the difference between if a soul appears and one that's not from Purgatory. You understand the catechism on Purgatory. You can cite 958. The more you pray for them, the more powerful their intercession is for you. So you're really, you probably should take over. If I leave before you, you could take over.
Well, you're kind, Susan.
Although I like red lipstick, so I don't think you could.
Yeah, that wouldn't go well.
That wouldn't work. I
don't think my wife would approve.
It's so exciting. I don't know. I never get tired of talking about it. And I've been swamped for the whole month of Purgatory because this particular month this year the Vatican had granted us a plenary indulgence every single day if we visited a cemetery or even mentally prayed if we were unable to. Usually it's the first 8 days that you can impart your indulgence, but for the whole month of November, you could have impart your indulgence up until today. But there's something else that's going to take over, which I'll tell you about.
Susan, for me, if you could, and then we'll take a few calls. Denise, I want to get your call. I see you online there, but today is still a day where if you fulfill the obligations church requests, you can free your mom, your dad, your sister, your brother, your son, whoever it might be. If there's a soul that you're concerned about or somebody who needs it, explain how that can be done. And then we can also talk about what happens.
So we're dispensed here in Illinois. So meaning, you know, you can watch Mass on television and it applies. So if you either attend Mass or watch Mass, say the prayers for the intentions of the Pope and do a spiritual communion and go to confession within 20 days, you can impart your indulgence to a soul or a number of souls in purgatory if you wish. So that's the criteria. And it's made very easy because, like for us, I don't know how it is in Wisconsin, we're dispensed, so we're able to still do it at home watching the Mass on TV. If that was lifted, let's say in Wisconsin, then you have to, you know, go to Mass, receive communion, visit the cemetery, say the prayers for the Our Father, Hail Mary, Glory Be for the intentions of the Pope, and go to confession within 20 days to impart the indulgence to a soul or all the souls. You could also impart it to yourself if you like. You can't give an indulgence to someone that is living, though.
Right. All right, well, that's well said. And if you can, I've got to go out tonight for a meeting. I'm going to drive by a cemetery. I'm going to pull in. I'm going to offer that indulgence up.
Yes.
Let's grab a call or two here very quickly.
And you don't even have to get out of the car. You could just pull right up to the cemetery. I was in a bus, and I jumped off, stood in front of the gates, and jumped back on the bus.
I love it. I've done it in my car a few times so far, and I just love the fact that you can do that, you know? So I would offer up those prayers. Denise is listening in Chicago. Denise, good afternoon. Hi.
Hi, Drew. Now,
hey.
The media doesn't really validate this story, but I have seen pictures. What I heard and what I read was that Melania was not comfortable living in the White House private quarters. She was having trouble sleeping. She was having trouble with just bad feelings. And she asked her priest to come and check. And he apparently found some items and demonic things in the private quarters of the White House and maybe other areas of it. They claim, the media denies this, but she claims that she had an exorcism done in their private quarters. And then the priest gave Donald Trump and Melania a Fatima statue, and there are pictures of that. But the media denies the whole story. She felt there were demonic presence in the White House and asked to have that statue and that exorcism.
I can't validate it all,
but I think it's true.
Yeah. You know, I remember the story. I remember hearing that a couple of years ago. I forget. I don't know the details of it. I have to do a search for it and try to find that story. But, you know, what is comforting about that is the fact that if a priest came in and offered exorcism prayers, if he had the place blessed, you know, he's brought in statues or sacramentals, then maybe it'll be, you know, maybe those accounts of supposed, you know, ghosts in the White House and the disturbances will leave. But look, when you bring in occult experts, when you have seances, when you have the New Age activities in the home, you know, clearly I would certainly believe, I'd be very prone, very open to believing that, yeah, there might be more to what's going on than people believe. But Denise, thank you. I appreciate that call and that follow-up. If somebody knows the answer to that story, if you've heard it as well, let us know. Susan, let me ask you about that.
Ghosts, I've heard it myself, what she said. I've read it online, too. I've seen the pictures with the statue of Our Lady of Fatima.
So let's talk about these disturbances. You know, I mean, Lincoln's son died, or Lincoln was assassinated. Kennedy, I mean, there's a ton of stories. I think some of it can be lore. You know, after a while, they kind of feed themselves. You hear about these haunted restaurants, and sometimes the stories just get bigger. How much of it is true, I don't know.
No,
but, you know, I do know there's been a lot of darkness in that White House. Believe me, there's been some activities that certainly, you know, I think warrant a blessing, maybe even an exorcism on it. Maybe a quick 101 for those who are listening. How do you discern the difference between a ghost and a purgatorial soul? And your thoughts on activities like what has been done?
You gave the perfect description, Drew. I was listening to you, the difference in terms of they're not angry, they're not vicious, they come in peace, and they come usually, and this is from all the books I've read over the years, in terms of the stories and with them appearing, you know who they appear to first, who they go to first? Family members. Family members and other religious going to the nuns in their order. If you mentioned Faustina, the nuns that were in purgatory were from her order. She had a bond with them. That's who they go to. So you gave a perfect description, and I can share something personal. I've had knocking in my apartment, and I thought it was the neighbors. I thought it was the workmen. I just thought somebody was putting up a painting, but it never stopped. And I told the souls, look, I scare easily. You don't need to come and see me. I'll take care of you. Just, you know, I'll take care of you. You take care of my family. I call them the dailies, the daily needs. But it was frightening, you know, to hear this. In fact, I even had a friend listen. And so what I did was I know an exorcist here in Chicago, and he blessed the apartment, and it never came back again.
That's awesome.
Now, they could have been the souls, but I don't know that. I just was very uncomfortable with this knocking, and especially when it went into my bedroom. That did it. That was it. So in fact, I'll tell you something. He did it from afar. He said, let me, you know, I was in the confessional. He says, let me do it now. So he just went in that direction, and I never had that problem again.
Well, that's amazing. Well, so you can join us too if you want to.
That's all I can say. I'm not an expert, but you gave the greatest definition of the differences. And
well,
there's a book out, Drew, that a young novelist, she wrote a novel, a story. It was a novel based on a mystic. And she asked me to it was very, very good. It won an award. I think it's called Tortured Souls by Teresa Linden. And it was really good. It's good for teens. It's good for adults. It's the first novel I've read on purgatory. It was excellent. But as I was reading it, she described the souls, you know, as scary. And I said, you can't do that. You know, I won't endorse it. That's not who they are. They're peaceful. They come in peace. They come to family members. They go to fellow religious. And the second thing I wanted to point out, they ask for something. They're coming either for one or two things, to let you know that they're okay. This is just from my reading, that they're okay, they're happy, or they need your help. Those are the two main reasons for their appearance. To console you or to ask you for help. And you can tell whether they needed help. My sister had wrote it down. My brother appeared to her, and she doesn't read, you know, the theology that I read. And I was dumbfounded at the description and how she explained it. And he went to her, you know, for the prayers. And that's another interesting thing. Why did he go to her? You know, I'm the sister that's doing all the masses. And I asked a priest, and he said, might have been partly for her own conversion. So, but he came in peace. She wasn't afraid. She just, the only thing she felt was the urgency to help him.
Well, my guest today, Susan Tassone. If you want to join us, I will open the phones. We'll grab a couple of your calls. If you're on hold, I'll get you. The number's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Before I take a break and we go to the calls, let me just ask you a quick question. Some people question, and I know it's almost a theological debate at this point in time. Can souls in purgatory pray for you? They can't pray for themselves. But can souls in purgatory perhaps offer prayers for you?
It's not a debate. It's in the catechism. You go to the catechism, 958. That's the one thing they can do is intercede for you. And the guardian angels let them know who's praying for them, and that even more so gets them going about, you know, interceding and helping you. But they can't pray for themselves, because once the soul leaves the body, it's either paying a debt in purgatory, right, or going directly to heaven, or God forbid, to hell. But yes, they can intercede while they're in purgatory for you, but they can't help themselves. For whatever reason, God gave us the power and the privilege to do this, to either to relieve and release them from purgatory. It's awesome. And then, of course, as you know, they're powerful, Drew. I can attest to it. You can attest to it. I'm sure your listeners, I would love to hear some of their stories about what they do, you know, how they help and intercede and how they protect you. And after they're, once they're released from purgatory, the first thing they do, Drew, is prostrate themselves before the throne of God, and they pray unceasingly for you all the days of your life until you're safely home in heaven. They become your nearest, your dearest, your sincerest friends for all eternity. John Macias was a Spanish priest, and he the souls would appear to him begging him. You know, he was very devout. He had great devotion, and they would come in droves, you know, pulling on his habit, pulling on his rosary. John Macias, you pray for the poor. You help the sick and the poor. Pray for me. And then another soul would shout, no, no, pray for me. They were fighting to get his prayers. He doubled up his prayers, and on his deathbed, he prayed three rosaries a night. Before he went to bed, I should say, and whether he was tired or not, whatever he was going through, he still did it. And then on his deathbed, Drew, it's been said that he liberated 1.4 million souls from purgatory, and it's said that the heavens were open and the souls rushed down to escort him to heaven.
Yep. Well, Susan, I've got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll grab some calls. It'd be good to hear from so many different people sharing their stories. You said it was Catechism 958? Is that
what
you were
saying? Yeah, it's in the Catechism. It's very clear.
I wrote to a guy who wrote to me. He asked me the question. I said, well, Susan always says check Catechism 958. I know prominent theologians throughout history have been on different sides. Aquinas argued against it. St. Alphonse Liguori, St. Bellarmine
those
argued
in favor.
Those
are the ones that say... Alphonsus Liguori and Teresa of Avila said most souls do, because we're not over yet. It's not the end of November 30th. Most souls are
in that camp. Hi, Drew Mariani here. Hey, I am traveling to the Holy Land in February with our underwriting sponsor, Nativity Pilgrimage. Information is available at relevantradio.com/Holy Land. That's relevantradio.com/Holy Land.
Well, you and I both know.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, I just love hanging out with you. I was talking to Maggie during the break and saying, it's just so fun talking about this, isn't it? From hauntings in the White House to understanding what the great saints encountered. They had disturbances too. And I've invited today Susan Tassone, who's written a number of books on the souls in purgatory, who's written about divine mercy as well, just to give us some perspective. And Susan, a lot of people want to join the conversation, so let's jump into the phones. Again, I just want to remind you, last day to take advantage of that plenary indulgence that you can get this last day of November. And Susan, we also have to talk about what's coming up for December, too.
Maybe
we should do that
and
make some calls very quickly. If you could lay that out for everyone, that'd be wonderful.
Well, take a tip for Christmas giving from two doctors of the church, Drew. We talked about Teresa of Avila and Alphonsus Liguori. You can help a soul reach heaven for Christmas, because most souls are released on Christmas Day, not All Souls Day. So it's not over until the souls sing, Drew. And it's as simple as that. You continue what you're doing. Go to Mass. Offer your indulgence. Do adoration. Pray the rosary. Pray the chaplet. They want, what do you want for Christmas? You want to be home for Christmas, you know? Give your desire let their desire be your desire to get them home for Christmas. I can't even fathom, Drew, how much purgatory is packed right now because of the hundreds of thousands of people that have died from COVID, from hurricanes, from you just name it. I just can't fathom the number of souls that died that were unprepared. And this is what we can do. We can explode open the doors of purgatory for them for Christmas. So it's not over yet.
Yeah, the other thing I think about, there's a lot, as Catholics, we have the beauty of the Mass. We have an understanding of this state called purgatory. A lot of our Protestant brothers and sisters and non-Catholics don't. So that's why it's an act of mercy for us to
exactly.
really pray for all those souls in purgatory.
You know, you could offer, you know how stressful the holidays are. You know that. You could offer up your stress. You know, you could have Gregorian Masses said for somebody who's just died. You could take the kids to the cemetery and teach them to pray the eternal rest prayer and sprinkle holy water on the graves. You could also pray the eternal rest prayer before and after meals. That was an old tradition years ago. You could say a decade of the rosary in front of the nativity scene. You know, explain to the children why the family's doing that. Light a votive candle. That's very powerful. That's a sacramental. Yeah, yeah. So because I'm sure in my family we lost people from COVID that are not here. They're gone. So that candle could be a sign of our prayer or just a sign of their presence. And of course, candles do help the souls in purgatory as well. Those are just a few things.
Let's do this, Susan. There are a lot of people who want to join us, and I'm grateful for your patience. If you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on. Let me start with Gail in Laverne, Tennessee. Gail, good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. I had great Uncle Pete and great Uncle Mike, and great Uncle Mike accidentally shot himself in a hunting accident.
Oh.
And he... For three nights in a row, he came and visited, sat on the end of my uncle, great Uncle Pete's bed, and stuff. And my great Uncle Pete just didn't know what to do. And the fourth night, my great Uncle Pete decided, well, I'm going to bless myself with holy water before I go to bed. He did that, and my great Uncle Mike took off his cap and waved him goodbye.
Wow.
And that was the end of it.
I love it, Gail. Thank you. And Susan, that's a great story, too, just in terms of, using sacramentals. Sometimes even a sprinkling of holy water.
That's all they need sometimes is
holy
water.
A small prayer is all they need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I love it. That's great. We'll move along. We'll go to, go ahead, Susan.
No, it's very common. My family, we have deceased loved ones that have appeared, and they sit on the bed. And either they want something or they smile to let you know they're okay. So that's very common that's for a soul to do that. So, if you don't know what to do, you pray. That's really what if you're not sure what they want, then just pray. Say the eternal rest prayer, sprinkle holy water, pick up the rosary, offer your Mass. That's what my brother needed from my sister, particularly her. He said, look at me, but it wasn't words. It was, I guess, you know, when you're not, it's from the heart. And she knew. He said, look at me. You know, she said he was like in a workroom. And so she knew. So of course, I let her know, do the Masses, go to confession. You have to go to confession in order for them to receive the grace. If you're in the state of mortal sin, you're not going to be of help to them. So be sure that you're in the state of grace when you're helping the soul in purgatory.
So Jody's got a question, I think, about confession. Louise and Cherry Hill, I'm going to grab you too. But Jody in Las Vegas, go ahead very quickly if you could.
Hi there. I had a question in terms of we talked about the 20 days, go to confession within 20 days after.
That's what the church
the Mass and
requires, yes.
And receiving the blessed sacrament. But my question is, am I not eligible to do this because I need to go to confession before receiving communion. And so I didn't receive communion last week, and I need to go to confession prior, which I wouldn't be able to do today before Mass. So I was wondering if I would still be able to receive communion and then just make sure I go to confession within 20 days, or I don't.
Great question.
I don't do this.
Jody, I love your question. Go ahead, Susan. I'll let you respond.
I think she's asking is, for example,
so she needs to go to confession, right? In order to get the indulgence, you need to.
Yes, within 20 days. And if you went to communion, that's fine. You just need to go to confession then.
You can go before or after, right?
Yes, exactly.
I always defer to the mercy of God.
You know, absolutely, Drew. Absolutely. That's correct. Don't fret. Here's another thing. I get this all, when I was working for Cardinal George. I was his development officer for the missions office, and I would get this question when people wanted to have Gregorian masses said, when do they start? The anxiety of people, their loved ones, they wanted to help them. And I got the same question, when do they start? And most of the times we get them out to the third world countries, it takes several weeks. So I called a couple priests, got the same answer, not to worry when they start. It's your effort that God takes into consideration. Once you send in the Gregorian masses, it's already counted in God's eyes. He doesn't wait for the check to be deposited. Yeah. He doesn't wait. It's your effort and where your heart is, and that's a great consolation for all of us to know that. Look, you made the effort, and it's already considered in advance. Probably my grandfather knew I was going to do Gregorian masses. How many years later? 60 years later after his death, and that was counted.
All right, let's move along because we have a little bit of time. Jody, I hope that helped. I hope we got your question. You did break up a little bit. Louise in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, thanks for waiting.
Hi, I'll be quick. Hi, Drew. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
My dad passed away a year ago, and he's very faithful. And I have a beautiful picture of him, and I have my mom. She passed away also, and a few friends. And I pick his picture up every morning, and I go, "Hiya, Dad," and I kiss him, and, you know, and I just say, "Pray for me." But so now I shouldn't do that, right? I shouldn't ask them to pray, like.
Well, why not? Of course you should. They're there to help you get home too. They're your intercessors. I was just at the cemetery visiting my parents. And I was sprinkling holy water over the graves, and I said, "Hey, we're having a couple problems over here, so pray for us, intercede." And, of course, you pray for them, because the more you pray for them, the more powerful their intercession is for you.
All right. Well, Susan, the lines are stacked. My apology to everybody on hold. I want to do one thing for the souls before we wrap it up, and that's the power of the Mass and Gregorian Masses. This is something you've been championing. And I hope people will take advantage of these. Very quickly, you've probably only a minute left to share.
30 Masses in a row.
How people can get Gregorian Masses.
Put them in your will. Put them in your will. Put them in your will. 30 Masses in a row instituted by Pope St. Gregory, or popularized by Pope St. Gregory. 30 Masses for a deceased soul. He had said for Justice the Monk. And after 30 Masses, the monk appeared to Pope St. Gregory and said he was released from purgatory. Does it guarantee you're going to be released from purgatory? No. The Church says it points to the efficacy and the power of the masses, and it's for one deceased soul, not a family, not somebody that's alive, and it points to the mass. That's the most powerful thing a soul needs, is the body and blood of Jesus. So Gregorian Masses, I always say one of my favorite places is the Pious Union of St. Joseph. Why? It's St. Joseph. He's the patron of the dying, and I like to support smaller, poor, you know, they take care of disabled adults, et cetera.
I gotta leave it right there.
Okay.
Always a delight having you here.
Same
I'm
here,
out of time for the day. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, God bless.